The Brendan O'Connor Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Discover a team that's always here to support you at All Care, taking care of communities across Ireland.
Let's park all that for a while because I have an extraordinary story for you now. The Harassment, Harmful Communications and Related Offences Bill was signed into law 2 weeks ago. This means it's now an offence to distribute intimate images of someone without their consent and carries a penalty of an unlimited fine or up to 7 years in prison. Alexandra Ryan is the founder and CEO of the online entertainment news website goss.ie, and she's had a huge interest in the enactment of this law, which she's written about in detail in a recent article on goss.ie. I spoke to Alexandra yesterday and she is so articulate. This is just an unbelievable story and it will really make you see how this kind of thing can just destroy someone's life.
Yeah, so basically 5 years ago, a weekend I'll never forget now, I slept with someone that I had been sleeping with before. So this wasn't someone new or someone I didn't trust. It's somebody I knew for actually quite a long time, and nothing extravagant or different happened that weekend. But about 2 weeks later, I was out of the country on holiday with my little sister, and I started getting all these calls from a blocked ID, which is never a good sign. And eventually I answered and there was a woman on the other line, and it was a woman who this man had kind of been seeing on and off. But when we had slept together, we were both single, both consensual, like there was nothing, there was no grey areas at all. But she was on the line and she said, "I'm looking at your sex tape right now and it really doesn't look good." Now, I kind of initially thought this was just trying to wind me up and it was fake, and I kind of laughed and I was like, oh, because I knew I'd never, ever taken part in a sex tape. I knew that this wasn't real. But then she started describing how I looked, what I was wearing. She was sniggering. She was laughing. She was basically suggesting that this was going to now be shared and other people were going to see it. And when she described what I was wearing and what we were doing, I remembered the weekend so vividly and I knew what night it was. And then I knew that something had happened. So the first thing I did was I rang the man. And immediately he admitted to it, and he said that he had, and it's more than one video, and there was lots of things that he did, and he admitted his guilt and that he like shouldn't have done it, and he didn't know what he was thinking. And in the meantime, this woman had found this footage and now she had it. So this is kind of where it all went downhill from there. But I suppose it's important to focus on as well that this video would not never have been in existence if it wasn't for the fact that he had filmed me. But back then that wasn't illegal. Like, I could have gone into your bedroom, Brendan, and filmed you and nothing would have happened to me. So the reality was there was nothing I could do. Even in that early stage, before all the rest was about to happen, I knew that I was very much helpless.
You must have been absolutely sick to your stomach when you got that call and the dawning realization.
Yeah, because I think, and I mean, when you talk about trauma, you talk to people that have been through trauma, they all kind of say the same thing. I think I was in shock, so I really didn't believe what she was saying. Even when she was describing what I was wearing and everything, I was like, no. But when he said the words, like, honestly, it was genuinely the worst moment in my life, and it still is now. I mean, probably that's a good thing, because I'm sure a lot of people have been through a lot worse, but I was shaking just from top to bottom. I was actually screaming in the street. I was in Greece and I was just so shocked. I was bawling, crying. I had left the restaurant. I was walking around the cobble streets. I didn't even realize I had left, and my sister found me and I was just in bits. And, you know, the next couple of days I was trying to deal with it and I just kept like having panic attacks. As well, you have to remember, this was 5 years ago. So this is way before the Me Too movement, way before the Harvey Weinstein trial. So back then, I really felt that there was no one who was going to believe my version of events. I like to wear low-cut tops. I like to wear nice, you know, tight dresses. I was thinking, everyone's going to think I'm promiscuous. People are going to think I was well up for this. And that's when kind of the feeling of shame and embarrassment starts. And unfortunately, this is what happens in any sort of these situations. Revenge porn, sexual assault, sexual abuse. It is this thing inside you where you feel like you're to blame and you're disgusting and you're an embarrassment and this is all your fault and you have to hide this and you have to keep this as a secret. And that honestly was so much worse as well. So there was just so many elements to it.
So you found out next that other people knew, yes?
So, yeah, when this all started and she rang me, I was watching her Twitter account just to see, was she going to try and suggest something? And I saw within a couple of hours she had something had been tweeted from her account that saying that she'd found something. So I got in touch with both of them again. And I was like, you know, I won't go to the guards. I won't go to my solicitor if we can just please keep this between ourselves. And he said he'd get her to stop, but she just didn't. So as I was leaving,
did you
Greece,
ring him at one point and tell him essentially that you were suicidal?
Yeah, so this is this moment. So I was on my way back from Greece. I was in the airport. It was maybe 2 or 3 days after the first call. And I got a text from a mutual friend of ours who also worked in the industry. And she was like, have you heard, like, there's apparently this tape of you and him, and she has it and everyone's talking about it. So this was only a couple of hours after I begged them not to say anything. So I rang him and I said, like, I'm getting text messages already. It's only been a couple of hours. Like, I don't know what to do. I was like very breathless, very panicky. And I literally said to him, like, I am suicidal over this. Like, I don't know if I can go on, if this is what I'm going back to. Because I was away and I was about to land back in Dublin. And I was like, I can't deal with this. I need to go to the guards. We need to sort this. And he was very much like, you don't want people in a police station looking at you in this video. It's embarrassing. It's going to be embarrassing for you. Like, you don't want to do this. Again, I was so young. I was 25. I was just terrified. I didn't want it to get out. And then when he said those things, I was like, right, okay, I need to just leave it. But I was so shaken and I kept saying to him, like, I just don't know if I can go on. Like, this is hurting me so much and I just don't know what's going to happen. What if people see it? But I guess in his mind, in fairness, he didn't want anyone to see it either. Like, he wrongly recorded us having sex, but he never did it with the intention of sharing it. But there was this third party now involved.
And that third party wasn't leaving it go. She started tweeting and kind of the tweets kept coming, alluding to this.
Worse and worse. And the thing is, she knew how I felt. I contacted her again. I was reaching out to her, begging her not to say anymore and not to share anything, and that I was hearing from people and everyone's talking about it. Please don't share it. And then basically he was like, the best thing to do is to say nothing and say it's not real and say that all of this is like made up in her head and she's just trying to get at you. So that was kind of the line I was told to go with. So when I landed back in Dublin, a few people did mention it to me and I was like, oh my God, it's ridiculous. It's made up. But inside, I literally was just completely falling apart. And I said it in the piece that I wrote that I published, that when I got back, I found out that so many people I knew about it and were
so
talking about it and were trying
getting
to find
on,
it.
People you knew, sorry, were getting on to you. Saying what?
Well, no, this is the hard part. Only a few people actually said, like one or two people said, I heard that you have a sex tape, and it was kind of laughed. It wasn't this trauma that was actually going on. It was kind of the story that was going around the Dublin social scene at the time, is that me and him had made a sex tape and it got leaked. And it was, you know, kind of Kim Kardashian-esque kind of gossip, salacious gossip story. Nobody knew that it was without my consent, or nobody cared to ask. And nobody, people did know she was tweeting or that her account was sharing things, but no one really said anything to me about that part. Only very, very few people told me they heard about it. A lot of the journalists that would have been friends at the time, none of them to this day have ever even brought it up, and they all knew about it. There was so many things that were going on at the start, and I guess that's one of the things that really hurt me as well, is that nobody messaged me. Like, none of my media friends messaged me and said, I've heard this has happened, are you okay? Like, what's going on? Instead, I was like ignored at events. Like, people weren't talking to me the way they used to. It was just this kind of dirty rumor that was going around. And like I said, I was so scared that it would be, you know, shared more, or that it'd be found. And I was scared of them, and I was scared of what she was going to do. So I never brought it up either. I never said anything. And maybe if I could go back in time, I would have gone back into those events with my head held up high and I would have told them what happened. But at the time, it was just this dirty secret. I was trying to keep it buried, and coming back was horrendous. Like, honestly, when I said in the piece that I had, you know, been suicidal or that I wanted to be dead, like, I thought twice about putting that in the piece, but I have to be honest with how I felt, and that is how I felt. I was waking up in the morning crying. Like, I'd have about 5 seconds of a respite, and then straight away I'd be like, oh my God, what if this comes out today? And like, I have my own business. I'd started from scratch. I was like, what if my clients find out about this tape and they don't want to work with me anymore? So I was concerned about financials. I was concerned about my reputation. I was concerned about my family. Every day was honestly like waking up to a nightmare, like, especially that first 12 months.
My God. And so there's layers of, there's the shame, the fear, the kind of paranoia. And then the fact that, like, really nobody understood, did they, what you were going through. For example, you said in that piece, you were in a bar one night and did some guy brought it up as a kind of a joke?
Yeah, so this is a couple of months later, maybe 10 months later. And so sometimes I'd feel like, oh, this is over. Like, no one's brought it up. This is great. And then I was on a night out and it was a mutual friend of me and the man's. And we were in a group full of men. I'd say there's about 10 guys there. And we were talking about something and he just said, oh yeah, like, you know, your sex tape. And I literally just started bawling, crying, and I'd say he didn't know what was going on. And I was like, do you not know how this happened? And that's kind of the first time I actually told somebody that wasn't in my inner circle of friends what had actually happened. And he had said, like, it had all been talked about and everyone was kind of like, oh, your man was Jack the Lad, and it was all funny and whoops, it got leaked. And when I actually told him what happened, he felt so bad, and he was like, nobody knows that this is actually what's gone down. And he was so shocked, and he was like absolutely disgusted by his behaviour and her behaviour as well. And he didn't realise all the stuff was going on. And one of the really hard things about all of this is I started hearing these rumours back from people I hadn't seen in years. So one night, a friend of mine I hadn't spoken to, I think in at least 5 or 6 years, a childhood friend, she messaged me and said she'd been on a night out and that she bumped into someone that she'd never met, just a stranger. And they were talking and they ended up somehow coming across my name and talking about me. And she told me that the person said to her, oh, you know, Ali Ryan has a sex tape. And I hadn't spoken to her in years. So she messaged me and said, is this true? Are you okay? What's going on? I mean, it's been 5 years now. I honestly have lost count with the amount of times I've been contacted by someone who said they've heard the rumor. And a lot of times it would be Chinese whispers. It wouldn't even be what the tape actually is. It would be some very strange version of it. But I think,
how long were you living the nightmare itself?
To be honest with you, Brendan, I really feel like it's probably only over since I published that piece a couple of weeks ago. But I guess the worst parts were the first 3 of the 5 years. The first year was definitely the worst. And there's people that, you know, really close to me in my life would say, like, they remember how bad I was. I was literally all over the place. Like, I was crying every day. I would go to an event and have to leave because I was crying. I'd be having panic attacks all the time. And in my piece, I talk about going to an award ceremony. Well, I was invited to go to an awards ceremony and I didn't go. I had this kind of nagging feeling that she was going to say something to me at it. I knew she was going, so I didn't go. I sent 2 of my staff, and the next morning I got a text message from a journalist saying, you know, this was said, and this woman came over and talked about the tape and went into detail about it. And I was just like, how is this still happening? Like, why is it? Felt honestly, the only word I can think of is terror. I felt terrorized. Like, why would this not just end?
Yeah. It must feel like your whole life is kind of gone in one way, like, and you wake up to that every day. Come here, you bumped into him last year. Was that the first time you'd seen him, spoken to him face to face?
First time I'd seen him in maybe 4 years. I had seen him, I think I talked about in the piece as well, about a year after the award ceremony, when I got another call from her, when she was suggesting that, you know, she wasn't going to do anything with the tape. But I bumped into him last year, so years later, and he was so apologetic. I mean, it kind of felt like he had been through something as well, because obviously he shouldn't have done it, and what he did is so wrong, and he caused all of this. And I was just like, you've no idea.
I know a lot of people are going to think it's a pity about him, like, that he was telling you his problems. I mean, I presume in terms of suffering, like, you're the one who suffered here.
And he said that he tried to say he was having a hard time, and I was like, oh, come on, you can't even. And, you know, he was like, you know, you've been building up this business as well during all of this. I don't think people even realize what you've been going through. And he did say, like, you know, he thought about it every day, and, you know, he knows, like, he's probably caused so much damage. And he was like, I just wish I could go back in time. And I was like, well, me too. Like, you know, there was no point in him getting annoyed or upset about it. Like, I was the one that suffered. That is the reality. I'm sure he didn't want the tape to come out, but no one was slut shaming him. Like, no one was, you know, ruining his reputation. And that's unfortunately what happens, you know, when you hear a lot of stories about revenge porn or videos getting out. The man is always praised and, like, you know, go on, you good thing, like, fair play to you. The woman is always a slut. The woman has done something wrong. But, you know, it was so much further down the line, like a good 4 years since all this happened, that his words meant nothing to me. They were absolutely meaningless. Like, I listened, but it meant nothing. Because I guess a lot of this was going on through, you know, there was text messages, there was Twitter, there was people talking, you know, telling me things. I guess they weren't saying that to him. So I told him that night, this is still happening. And he didn't seem to realize that it was going on. But that's the part of this, I suppose, that's quite unique, maybe compared to some other stories, is the harassment side of it. The fact that I was forced to relive this every day, you know, every time I went out, every time I logged on to social media, it just wouldn't go away. And that's the thing that I found so hard. Like, I was going to counselling about a month after this all happened. I had to, like, for my life, to literally save my life. I had to. I was completely falling apart and I just didn't know how to get out of it. And I was saying to my counselor, like, you know, even when I feel like it's okay, I see something or I hear something or someone will text me and it's like it's starting all over again. It just wouldn't go away. And that's why I'm saying the trauma part of it is so multi-layered. It's the deceit, the fear, the paranoia, but then the ongoing feeling of being attacked and being questioned and having people that you know say things in a funny way, like, oh my God, like, do you remember that time? And I'm literally sitting there shattered inside and I'm like, you have no idea what I've had to go through. And then I'm like, do I tell this person what I've been through? And then are they going to try and find the tape? Because the important thing about the legislation, and this is why I told the story now, there's been so many times, especially in the last 2 years, where I've actually wanted to talk about this and I've wanted to tell the true story and explain what happened. But even my own legal team were saying, like, if you put this out now, that video is still legally going to be shared. Like, nothing will happen. There'll be no repercussions. If you put that out now and it gets shared on YouTube or WhatsApp, we can get it taken down, but it's out there. So I knew I had to wait. And that's been a horrible feeling. I felt like I was gagged for the last 5 years that I haven't actually been able to tell people what happened. I had to keep denying it existed because what if I said it? Like, what if I was doing the show with you now and the law hadn't passed? How many of your listeners would try and find it? Like, this is the thing I was facing all the time. And when I talked to my mom about it, like, oh, I want to talk about it, I want to tell people, she was always bringing that up too. She was like, how are you going to feel if this gets shared again? Because you're just starting to get over this. Like, how are you going to feel if people accuse you of being a liar? Like, these were all the things. And I was feeling such a sense of injustice. I was like, why am I sitting here worrying about how I look or how I'm going to be perceived? Like, this isn't my fault.
It must have been difficult to tell your mom, was it?
Yeah, it was horrible. So when I said to you I was with on my holidays with my sister in Greece, it's because my other sister was about to get married. So when I went back to Ireland, I had to go into my sister's wedding. So I told nobody at all because I was like, this is not the time. And I even remember the day of my sister's wedding, like going up to my room and just like crying in the middle of the day. I just had to get it out and then go back down, be a bridesmaid again. And then a couple of weeks after that, I couldn't even say it to my mum's face, to be honest. I rang her. And I was like, I have to tell you something. And honestly, I can't explain how horrible it is to have to tell people this. I've had to do this a few times. It's horrible. And I was just like, this is what happened. And I had to explain that I was with this man and that I trusted him and I didn't do anything wrong. And she dealt with it so well. I was bawling on the phone and she was like, Ali, like, you have done nothing wrong. And even if people do see that video, what you're doing is natural, it's consensual, it's, you know, nothing that you're doing in the video is actually bad. And she was just like, hold your head up high and go back to the events and, you know, go back into work and don't be feeling that you've done something wrong. Don't be ashamed of yourself. You know, people are going to say what they want to say. And she was like, you know, the amount of people that probably have these videos out there, we probably don't even know. But what I said to her was, yes, I agree with everything you're saying and I want to hold my head up high, but I didn't partake in the video. And that's the part that killed me. I hated that everyone thought this was just something that got leaked that I did and I took part in. And I said to her, that's what I'm struggling with. And I said, I struggle with the fact that people are talking about it. And she was just like, you know, all that matters is that, you know, the people you love and the people you care about, that they know the truth and that you know the truth. And she kept being like, it's really not the worst thing that's even in the video. So she was very good about it and she really calmed me down. And then I had to ring my other sister. It was horrible having to tell people at all. And I said in the piece as well, like, over the last 5 years, if I started dating somebody new, if it was going somewhere, I'd end up having to tell them because I'd be worried, do they hear about it? And that might sound quite paranoid, but like I said, strangers were coming up saying they heard about it. So I'd have to be like, hi, look, this is what happened. So when I published the piece, a part of it for me, as well as getting a bit of vindication in some way, being able to tell my own story, a part of it was like, oh my God, it's out there. Because I kept saying to my mum when things were very bad, I just want this to come out now. I actually just want it to be out there. I want it to be in the press. I want someone to share it, like whatever. Like, and she was like, you don't mean that. And I was like, but I do. I was like, it's the fear of it getting out that's crippling me.
Yeah.
It's every morning wondering, is it going to be seen? Is today the day? I was like, I just want it to be over. And I kept saying that over and over again. And it wasn't until I literally pressed publish that feeling felt.
Yeah, sorry, didn't mean to interrupt. So the worst has happened now and it's out there.
Yeah.
In a way. How did that feel then?
It felt incredible, to be honest. I never knew what it was going to feel like. And it was very much a huge gamble. I'm sure you know this yourself. You never know what way a story is going to be taken, especially when it's online. But literally within the first couple of hours, I felt completely like a different person. Like, I feel so much lighter. I feel so much freer. I don't think I realized how much it still was affecting my life. Like, I knew back then I was very traumatized and I was not in a good place. But in the last 2 or 3 years, like, I've thought about it a lot. I've talked about it a lot. I've felt good about it. But when it was out there, something literally lifted out of my body and I just felt like a different person. And then the response has been overwhelming. And I've just had messages from people all over the world. Like, this is the thing, like, this might sound like a harrowing story, but like, there are so much worse out there. There are young girls, you know, who are underage who've been filmed and things have gone around. Or, you know, there's people that have been with their partners for years that they've trusted and now they're holding this over them like a ransom. There really is so many other stories out there. And so many people have got in touch to tell me that they've been struggling to tell their family or tell their friends what happened. And when they read the piece, that they kind of feel like they have the words now. And that's what I wanted to do, because even since I published it, there's been a lot of people been like, oh, who are the people? Oh, what happened? And I'm like, that's not what this was about. This was about explaining what the actual consequences are of doing this to somebody. Because I think revenge porn happens in much smaller ways, in terms of like, a girl might send a picture to her boyfriend and he sends it to the lads' WhatsApp group. So it might never get out on Twitter, or it might never go up on a porn site. But I don't think men and women understand the true effect that can have on someone to find out that a picture of you or a video of you is being sent around, something that was not meant to be shared. And for me, I wanted men and women to read it and be like, oh my God, this is actually how somebody can feel. I didn't want it to be another big salacious gossip thing. That's not what I wanted. And thankfully, that's not how it's been taken. And I do feel now no one can hold it over me. Like I said in the piece, about 2 years ago, I started getting blackmailed about it. Some guy I'd never met.
Yeah, tell me about that. And
so he said, so I don't know if you remember, there was a big Instagram page going around for a while called Bloggers Unveiled. Mm-hmm. And they were kind of targeting influencers. And when that happened, I got an email from this guy and he said, oh, I'm going to send this into Bloggers Unveiled. I have this video of you. So this was a good bit on from all of this. This was only 2 years ago. So 3 years had passed. And I just actually couldn't believe this was coming back again. It literally felt like a nightmare every time. And he said he had this video, but thankfully it was all in black and white. It was all emailed to me. So I was actually able to go to the guards with this one, because, you know, blackmail is illegal. So I went into the guard station. I was getting emails from this guy like 12 o'clock at night, 1 o'clock in the morning, saying he had this video and everyone was going to find out about it. So I went in, and when I was in the guard station, I was with a senior detective and he was like, what actually happened? And it was such a weird moment, because I hadn't told anybody in the last, you know, 3 years what had actually happened. So I told this detective what happened, the whole story with him and her and how it all happened. And he was like, right, well, look, this guy's emailing you, so we're going to sort this out. And it did get sorted. But it was such a horrible feeling that someone else, even someone I hadn't met, was able to hold it over me. Now, nothing happened in terms of I didn't give him any money, but it was the feeling that I was being controlled again. And it was actually my other sister's wedding the next week. For some reason, this kept happening around family events. So she was with me again. My little sister, God love her, she's been with me through a lot of this, when I was getting all these messages. So I deleted all my social media for about a month, because I was just so concerned that that Instagram page were going to upload it. And again, like I said, wouldn't have even been illegal if they had. So nothing happened with it in the end, but it really gave me that feeling and sense of injustice again, because I was like ringing my mom when this happened too, and I was like, again, there's nothing I can do about this. Like, what, how can I keep living like this? I was like, how many times is this going to happen? Am I going to get blackmailed every year? Is someone going to be sent it and go, right, I know what to do? And that's the thing that really started being more of a problem to me than the actual existence of the tape. It was the fact that people were now using it against me, that they were trying to get money out of it, that I was so scared of it that people were able to use it to control me. And I guess publishing the piece meant that that's over now. Like, there's nothing someone could do now that could even try and hurt me. And if someone even now suggested of sharing it or whatever, the legislation is so strict. If I even saw one tweet from someone saying they were going to do something, I'd be immediately onto the guard. So it does put women like me in such a more protected position. But like, to go through the last 5 years knowing that I couldn't be helped, I couldn't be protected, I couldn't talk about it, I couldn't go to sleep at night knowing if something happens I'll get justice, I just had to live with it.
Yeah, it's extraordinary. And like, you're being cast back into that trauma all the time, aren't you? Every time it gets triggered, you go back into that trauma and it's there happening for you all over again. You know, I think we've all read about this issue in the abstract, maybe, or whatever. But to hear you tell that story like that, I think really does ram it home. In the broader sense of things, in situations like this, is it still a case that there can be that tendency to, as you felt a lot, I think, that the victim does kind of get blamed or is the one who suffers?
Yeah, definitely. Now, the tides are changing in terms of the Me Too movement and things like that. I have seen definitely people are more willing to believe people. But no, it's still there. And I think it's actually a natural thing that women and men just blame the victim. It just, you know,
you
even
think
when,
women
like I
do
said,
it too?
Yeah, I mean, and that's, I think, the most shocking part of the story when people have gotten contact with me have been like, they, you know, they were angry at the man, but then when they realized what the woman did, they were so shocked. But misogyny is, you know, embedded in women as much as it is embedded in men. And this year, like, I set up a campaign over the summer called Bear It on my Instagram. I was kind of sharing photos like, you know, more in lingerie and things like that to kind of push myself out there and take control of my body and be like, this is OK. Like, I can look like this. I can wear a low cut top and still be respected. And when whenever I do talk about this, not anymore, but when I did, I used to get so many messages, mainly from women calling me a slut, calling me a slapper, put your clothes back on. So I kept it kind of really pushed me to talk about this even more and more, because I was like, women calling each other sluts or calling each other slappers only allows men to do it. So we're actually making this so much worse and making little comments about how women dress. I truly believe that's like the stem of where all these huge problems come from. And it leads to things like revenge porn, to sexual assault, sexual abuse. If you're a man and you're growing up in this world where your girlfriends and your mate friends are calling women a slapper or calling them a slut, why would you not treat a woman in such a way if that's how you feel?
So where does this leave? It's a different situation to yours, but obviously there's I suppose a culture among younger and younger people now of sharing images with somebody maybe that they do trust at the time and all that kind of thing. Where do you think what does your experience make you think about that?
My honest truth, my honest feeling about this is that we should be, as humans, be able to share photos of ourselves with the people that we love. You know, sex is not a dirty thing. It's not evil. We should be able to do that and not feel ashamed. And we should be able to feel we can trust people. And now there are laws in place to protect that. So I would hate to say don't do those things if that's what you want, because we should be able to. But we live in a world that has black and white and grey areas, so I don't know. I would never share anything, and since this happened to me, I'm sure you can imagine, I have never ever shared a single thing, and I'm terrified even when I'm with somebody if they're going to try and film me again. So like, I'm on the other side of it now.
Yeah. Do you find it hard to trust people now?
Yeah, men and women, to be honest, maybe even women more so because of what went down in terms of the online harassment. But yeah, no, I do. That's been a part of all this since I've published the piece. I really do feel a good bit healed in that retrospect. I think the best thing for me now to do is to not let this define me anymore,
yeah,
which is what it has done, and instead own it and be open about it and, you know, start trusting people again and allow myself to be happy, because I really think I've spent the last 5 years so miserable that I just didn't think I even deserved a good man or a good friend. I've just been in such a down place because every time I'd think I deserve something good, I would remember this dirty secret that I had, and that's the only way I can describe it. But now that it's gone and it's out there, I'm just hoping that this is honestly a fresh start for me.
Okay, so you think you're going to be okay?
Yeah, no, I definitely do now.
Okay, that was Ali Ryan speaking to me yesterday. So the next time you hear that phrase, that awful phrase, revenge porn, that's what's behind each incidence of that. And look, if there is anything, if that brought up anything for you and you'd like to talk to somebody, go to rte.ie/helplines and all the numbers you could need are there. Lots of you texting in, and a lot of men, I have to say, texting in and basically to express admiration for Ali, and also everybody wishing her well for the future. And Mara in Dublin 15 says, well done to that lady. She's so brave. Hold your head up high, she says.